Okay, I'm just saying it. We keep tripping over gradient descent in like half the things we cover now. It feels rude that we've never just sat down and made it boring in the good way.
Ooh, and the funny part is, it's not some side character. It's the whole move under a lot of modern ML. We keep name dropping it like everyone already has the picture, and that is such an exploring next problem.
Right. It's one of those terms that sounds like you're supposed to nod wisely and move on. Meanwhile, I'm like, okay, but what is the machine actually doing?
Picture a foggy hill. You want to get to the bottom, but you can't see the whole landscape, only the ground right under your feet. So you feel which way slopes down, take a small step that way, then do it again.
Yeah, that part I get. The part I don't get is why that dumb little loop is enough to train, say, a language model, instead of just wandering around forever.
Because the hill isn't a real hill. It's a loss function, which is just a score for how wrong the model is. The model has parameters, meaning the internal numbers it uses to make predictions, and gradient descent keeps nudging those numbers so the score goes down.
Okay, so the loss function is basically the badness meter. That's already cleaner than the way people say it on a slide deck.
Exactly. And the gradient is the important bit of math here. It tells you two things at once: which direction makes the error smaller, and how steep the slope is in that direction. Steeper means bigger push, flatter means smaller push.
Mm-hmm.
So the update is not random. It's a very specific little correction based on where the model is currently standing on that error landscape. Then you repeat it.
That's the part that always makes it feel almost insultingly plain. Like, the brain of the thing is just a bunch of numbers getting nudged around.
Yes, and that's not a downgrade. That's the whole trick. Modern models are huge collections of adjustable numbers, and training is the process of finding settings for those numbers that make the model less wrong on the examples it sees.
Okay, hold on. When you say parameters, you mean weights and biases and all that stuff, right? The knobs inside the model.
Yeah, those are the knobs. They're the internal values the model uses to transform input into output. If the model guesses wrong, gradient descent figures out how each knob should move to make that kind of mistake a little less likely next time.
Right, so the model is not learning by, I don't know, staring at the data and having a thought. It's learning by adjusting the knobs that produce the mistake.
Exactly, and that adjustment needs a size. That's the learning rate, which is just the step size knob for gradient descent. Too small, and training crawls. Too large, and you overshoot the low point and bounce around like an idiot.
That is a very technical description.
It's also the practical failure mode people actually hit. You can have the right direction and still mess it up if the steps are too aggressive. Then the model keeps jumping past the valley instead of settling into it.
Okay, so the thing has direction and speed. That's already a better mental model than I had. But where does the direction come from? Because the model has a ton of parameters. Not one.
That's where backpropagation comes in. It's a way to efficiently compute how much each parameter contributed to the error without doing some ridiculous brute force search over every knob one by one. In a neural network, backprop walks backward through the...
So gradient descent is the actual stepping, and backpropagation is how you figure out which way to step.
Yeah, that's the clean way to say it. Backpropagation gives you the gradients, and gradient descent uses them to update the parameters. They're paired, but they're not the same thing.
That's the first time that's ever sounded non-mystical to me. We've definitely said both words like they were interchangeable, which is, you know, very us.
A little bit, yeah. And for a deep neural network, that pairing is what makes training tractable. Without backprop, the cost of asking how should this parameter move would be absurdly high.
Wait, so the model makes one prediction, gets an error, backprop figures out the blame map, and gradient descent moves the knobs. Then it sees another example and does it again.
Exactly. Usually not just one example at a time, though. Often you update from a batch or a mini batch, which just means a small group of examples. That makes the updates less noisy than pure one example at a time training, but still fast enough to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this ends up being the workhorse. It doesn't need a special trick for every task. If you can write down a loss and the thing is differentiable enough, gradient descent can usually push on it.
Okay, that broadness is kind of the wild part. So it's not just for one model type. It's the same basic engine whether you're fitting a tiny classifier or training a giant transformer.
Yeah, we did a whole overview on transformers, episode 638, and the important piece here is just that a transformer is still a pile of parameters being trained against a loss. Gradient descent doesn't care whether the architecture is elegant.
That is deeply annoying in the best way. The math is just standing there like, cool, Give me a score and I'll do the rest.
Exactly. And in practice, the versions people use are almost never the pure textbook version. Momentum, Atom, RMS Prop, those are optimizer variants that add memory or adaptive step sizes, so training is smoother and usually faster.
Right. And that's one of those places where the simple story is true but incomplete. The basic hill walk is the idea, and the real system is the hill walk with better shoes.
That's actually not bad. Atom especially is basically a practical optimizer package for messy landscapes. It keeps some history so you don't react too wildly to every tiny bump, and it adjusts step sizes per parameter in a way that usually behaves better than the naive version.
So when people say a model was trained with gradient descent, they often mean some optimizer in that family, not literally the most stripped down version.
Yeah, in the wild, it's usually stochastic gradient descent or an Atom-style optimizer. Stochastic gradient descent just means you're using noisy samples or mini-batches rather than the full dataset every time, which is cheaper and often good enough.
Okay, I want to pin the intuition again because this is where people get lost. In the hill analogy, the slope is local, right? You're not seeing the whole mountain range.
Right. You only know what the terrain looks like where you are. That's why it's called gradient descent, not omniscient descent. It's making the best move based on local information, then recalculating after each move.
That also explains why it can get weird in rough terrain. If the landscape has weird little dips, you can end up in a...
Exactly. That's the local minimum problem. The algorithm can find a low point that's good enough, but not necessarily the best possible one. In huge modern models, the landscape is so high-dimensional that people care less about perfect global optimality and more about getting to a good enough basin that generalizes.
Mm. So it's not a treasure map, it's a competent hiking strategy.
Yeah, pretty much. And sometimes the hike is bumpy enough that you need momentum to keep from stalling on every little ridge.
That actually makes me think of the practical side. If the learning rate is too big, you bounce around. If it's too small, you're basically camping on the slope forever.
That's the trade-off. And there isn't a magical universal setting. Different models, different data, different batch sizes, different optimizers, all of that changes how delicate the step size needs to be.
Of course it does. Nothing gets to be simple for free.
Nope. But the simple part still matters. The fact that the update rule is local and repeatable is what makes the whole thing scalable. You can parallelize pieces of the computation, feed it lots of data, and let the repeated nudges accumulate into something useful.
So this is why it powers so much of the stuff we talk about. It's not sexy, but it's the common mechanism underneath the sexy stuff.
Yeah. Image recognition, translation, recommender systems, big language models. If there's a trainable model with a loss you can differentiate, this is the engine doing the adjustment. It's boring in the same way plumbing is boring, as you should. That's the least annoying way for it to live in your head.
All right, Aver, I think we finally did the thing. Episode 677, and we've only mildly embarrassed ourselves.